Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast powered by betonline.ag. And finally, I mean finally, it's here. No more preview podcasts. We're talking college football week one and none of that week zero garbage with Colorado State and Hawaii and Wyoming and New Mexico State. I am your fearless leader taking you through the slate, Todd Furman, joined as always by the real man around here that does the heavy lifting, Payne Insider. Payne, you ready to start talking some games, eh?
The real games that count. We are in regular season mode. I will have you know that I am prepped and ready. I found ChapStick. So I am in mid-season form. I got to tell you, I haven't bought ChapStick in a while. $4.97 for Burt's Bees.
I mean, you got to buy a whole bucket. Just buy a whole bucket. We can take up a collection from our listeners, and you know, we can have the donations there. So every day you start the podcast, you'll have like 20 different things at ChapStick so you don't lose it next to your laptop or your workstation or whatever the hell you're working off of these days.
I know you joke about my spending habits, and then when I go to buy stuff that you actually need, I was stunned to see $5 for ChapStick. This is the pomegranate flavor, and it's organic, so that's nice. It has soybean oil in it.
Pomegranate's an aggressive move. I would go with the traditional. I'm not sure pomegranate is in my arsenal. I can't go with the flavored stuff.
I could see that from you.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know what? You find something that works, and you stick with it. Of course, the topic of discussion, we'll have all the week's one's biggest games. We'll be joined by the newest member of our Bet the Board staff, Dusty Dvorak, to break those down. But, Payne, before we get into some of that, wanted to ask your question real quick on your approach for handicapping early season college football without data points compared to the NFL, where at least you have the preseason and slightly more known commodities.
It's completely different. I think that's the biggest thing. You got to really know these players inside out. You got to know the coaches for either sport, obviously. But for me, when I'm looking at college football week one, there's just a lot more ground to cover. The lines continue to come out earlier and earlier as sports books are like fighting for PR. And that, you know, makes us do our job earlier. So at this point, you know, I know we're a couple days away from games. People are anxious to start firing the board. These lines have been beat up since April and May. You're a little behind the eight ball at this point. So for me at this stage, you should probably be a little bit more conservative firing the board into lines that have been pretty well adjusted at this point.
And that, my friends, is your college football sports betting PSA. For all the big game analysis, we welcome in the third member of our Bet the Board team, a man who played the game at its highest level. You can follow him on Twitter at Dusty Dvorak. And Dusty, major games on the schedule this weekend. We may as well jump right in with one that'll have national championship implications. In Atlanta, where it's Washington taking on Auburn, and when you look at this number, it's ping-ponged all over the place. BetOnline.ag right now, Auburn a 1.5-point favorite. Total in this game, 48. I guess first things first, can Auburn erase the demons of playing in the Peach State with back-to-back losses in this same building?
You know, I mean, they can. I mean, they've got a great defense coming back. Their front seven, I think it's the best in the SEC. I love that defensive line led by Derek Brown. They've got linebackers that can really run. So I think defensively, they're going to be equipped and really pose a challenge for Washington. One thing about Jake Browning, you know, under duress last year really is when he was at his best. So you think Kevin's still in that defense. They're going to come after. They're going to attack Jake Browning, try to put him in bad situations. Well, last year, under duress, Jake Browning completed 52% of his passes, 4 touchdowns, no picks. That was the best in the Pac-12. So if you want to bring pressure and get him under duress, he can move around a little bit and still make plays down the field. You know, the question is, are they going to be able to get Myles Gaskin going? Offensive line should be very solid. They get a guy in Trey Adams back who's an absolute stud. Caleb McGarry, another solid guy up front. So that's going to be a good battle with that Washington offensive line and the Auburn defensive line. On the other side, I give a big advantage to the Washington defense. You know, this Auburn offense – They're going to rebuild that offensive line. They lose Braden Smith. They lose Kerryon Johnson. They lose Petway. So really the bulk of their rushing attack and kind of what they hang their hat on is gone. And when I look at this Washington defense, 9 starters coming back. I know that they lost Vita Vea, but they got Greg Gaines, a big guy in the middle, and linebackers that can run. And where this Husky defense really excels is the secondary. All the starters coming back in the secondary. Taylor Rapp's an absolute stud. You know, JoJo McIntosh said this camp, he thinks this is the best defense they've had there yet. So as I look at this game, I think that Jared Stidham's going to have to try to get that vertical passing game going, which he has, you know, his top 5 pass catchers back. And, you know, last year, that's where they made the improvement at Auburn. You know, he had 9 touchdown passes of throws of over 20 yards compared to 5 the previous year. Problem is the Husky defense, that's where they excel. You know, only gave up 4 touchdowns at 20-plus yards, but had 5 picks. So you take your shots on this Husky defense, they can make you pay. It's a fantastic opening week matchup. You know, this game, I think, is more important for Auburn than it is for Washington. Washington, I think, can still run the table in the Pac-12 and get to a college football playoff with a loss. Whereas Auburn, I look at that schedule, I think they need this game even more so. But clearly, one of the bigger games with college football playoff implications we're going to see all year, and it's right here out of the chute.
Interesting to hear you say that, Dusty, because I'll play a little devil's advocate. I actually think if Washington were to lose this game and run the table in the Pac-12, unless there was some chaos elsewhere, even a one-loss Pac-12 champion at 12-1 could struggle to get in. But I don't want to veer too far off topic in that regard as far as national championship implications. Payne, when you look at this particular matchup, we've seen money come in initially on the Huskies, and I think I have an understanding why. Can you walk us through how professional bettors may assess these two teams and some of the things they could be looking at in this matchup to explain why we're seeing money come in on the Dogs?
I think when we're looking at this game from a point spread perspective early on in the year, it's a lot about the point spread. It's about your power number. It's not necessarily about, you know, the situation or the spot, which we see a lot later on in the year. The power numbers indicate Washington should be about a 1.5 point favorite here. I do think there's going to be just a little bit of a battle. There is that other idea where, hey, I've seen this play out 100 times. I've seen what Jake Browning is capable of when the competition heightens. And I think we could eventually see Auburn take some professional money. But the math guys certainly like Washington in this situation.
Yeah, always interesting when you try and rectify the situation from what your eyes tell you as far as overall talent, Payne. You mentioned Jake Browning and his struggles against athletic defenses. I'm not going to put Auburn on the same level as the Alabama team he lost to in the college football playoff, but should be fascinating to watch. And Dusty, you raised some excellent points talking about this Washington secondary really being the strength. Auburn down a couple key cogs there. We're not quite sure what the ground game is going to look like. I asked both of you, and either one of you, feel free to take it. When I look at the sidelines, is there a coaching advantage that you think will have a major impact on the outcome of this game?
I'm going to have to say Peterson. I mean, I go all the way back to Boise and, you know, in bowl games, what he's been able to do, all the way back to against my alma mater in Oklahoma. And just what he's built there in Washington. I mean, I think he's got a team that's got a legitimate chance to get to the college football playoff for the second time in 3 years. I think it's his most veteran team and it's his most talented team. And you referenced Jake Browning. He was a sophomore 2 years ago. And let's not get it twisted. This Auburn defense is good. They're not as good as that Alabama defense was. So I hear what you're saying, but to me, I'm sure the quarterback has learned quite a bit from those experiences being in those situations that would tell me he's going to be primed and ready to go for this opening week matchup.
Definitely should add plenty of levels of excitement right out of the gates. A 3:30 Eastern kickoff from a neutral field down there in SEC country. From afternoon delight to a game in primetime in South Bend, where it's the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, a modest 1.5 point favorite at betonline.ag. You look at this total at 47. And Payne, this number has already taken a lot of money, so it appears, with Michigan installed as a favorite early on. We've seen waves of money come in on the Irish. But some major question marks about both of these teams. Is there a particular matchup that you have your eye on in trying to handicap these two teams locking horns?
I think it's the Michigan offense versus the Notre Dame defense. You know, you're still unsure about the offensive coordinator situation, who's going to be calling the plays. I'm anxiously waiting to see what Michigan does offensively just because of that. I've heard guys on the offensive side of the ball are happy. They say Michigan's offense is more simple than in previous years. to the naked eye, I don't know if it's difficult just to continue to pound the ball into the line of scrimmage at nauseam, but apparently it was. And you had like leaders like Cesar Ruiz and Grant Perry come out and say, hey, this is the best offense we've been a part of at Michigan. For once, we're just not getting our asses kicked in drills and scrimmages. They're really giving Don Brown's defense a run for its money. So I'm interested to see if that materializes into like meaningful games. There was talks of the RPO Harbaugh was hinting at after leaving Doug Peterson's Eagles practice this summer. You know, I think what we know here is if Michigan's going to take that next step and be elite, it's going to have to be on offense. They were 91st in the country in efficiency last year. They were 110th in pace. So we need to see drastic changes. And I think we could possibly see that this weekend against Notre Dame.
And you mentioned the Michigan offense being a major question mark. Dusty, on the flip side, you look at Notre Dame Coach Kelly coming out earlier this week saying Brandon Wimbush is his guy, but also that he wouldn't hesitate to go to Ian Book if the situation necessitated it. We saw Wimbush at his absolute best. We know his legs are where he makes his money. Book more of a polished passer, and I use that term relatively speaking. When you look at the Irish and their offense, do you think they're going to have success against what arguably could be a top three defense in Michigan, if maybe not the second best defense outside of Death Valley?
I don't. I absolutely love this Michigan defense. I mean, how can you not? The defensive line is loaded. Rashawn Gary headlines at Vinovich. Devin Bush, an outstanding linebacker. Kalik Hudson, they got guys on the back end. I mean, I had this Michigan team in their bowl game against South Carolina, their last game. And talent is something they have defensively. I think Don Brown is great. He keeps it simple. He lets those guys go play. And let's face it, Michigan's lost. They're coming in with a three-game losing streak. Jim Harbaugh's got to have this game. He's going to have these guys ready, especially defensively. Here's the problem for Notre Dame. You mentioned Wimbush. He has not proven he's a passer, which is why we saw Ian Book in the bowl game, you know, take them and lead them to victory against LSU. He's the better passer of the two. And, can, you know, the word is that Wimbush has really grown, you know, this offseason, this fall camp, and he's become a much better passer. Boy, it better show early because – you know, they hung their hat on running the football last year. Eighth in the country, just under 270 yards a game at 6.3 a clip. Problem is, you lose your tailback. You lose two All-American offensive linemen in McGlinchey and Quentin Nelson, I think, was the best offensive lineman in college football last year. And Harry Heistan was the offensive line coach at Chicago when I played for the Bears. He rebuilt that Notre Dame offensive line. He's back with the Chicago Bears. So that's a lot of key integral parts of your rushing attack that was really your identity offensively a year ago, and those guys gone, and now you're facing this Michigan defense. That's a tough matchup for the Irish.
Payne, when we look at this number, I mean, we think the Irish are going to continue taking money, or you think there'll be a little bit of buyback? I know we'll get Dave Mason's take on exactly where the public's coming down and what I think will probably be the most heavily bet game of the day. But in your estimation, I mean, do we think this number closes in that dead zone, you know, 1, 1.5 either way?
I could see that. I mean, right now it would appear like there's some early money from professionals on Notre Dame. For me, I think it's about having a backbone. Getting information is crucial, but I certainly won't be backing that side. I would tend to lean a little bit here with the public on Michigan. They've made it a point that this is a game that they absolutely need. I think there's glaring question marks for Notre Dame, both offensively and maybe even a little bit defensively as well. I just want to see what Michigan does offensively. I just got to see if there's chemistry on that side of the ball. It sounds like there could be, but public is going to be on Michigan. Professionals are going to be on Notre Dame, but I am not joining the latter.
Hey, yeah, real quick on that
sure,
Michigan
fire away,
offense.
Dusty.
I want to throw this in there because Shea Patterson's going to take over, and I'm getting ready for Ole Miss and Texas Tech this weekend, and I've been watching quite a bit of Ole Miss tape. And I got to tell you guys, Jordan Tamu made that offense at Ole Miss run more efficiently. So Shea Patterson, not that he was bad. I mean, the guy's basically averages about 315 yards a game passing since in the 10 starts he's had there at Ole Miss. But he turns the ball over too much, fellas. 12 interceptions in 10 games he started there. That's the one area, you know, everybody wants this Michigan team to be able to, you know, throw the football more vertically down the field. They were 110th in the country last year in passing offense, just 9 passing touchdowns. So it's going to be better with Shea Patterson. The one area I would caution, he's had a propensity to throw the ball to the other team. That is one thing that could, you know, be a real problematic for this Michigan offense and trying to get to where they want to. Shea Patterson's got to make good decisions, take care of the football. And if he can do that, this Wolverine team is going to be tough to deal with all season.
I'll say one thing, guys, and I know Washington-Auburn, it's the only top 10 matchup on the board. This game has me much more excited, and maybe it's because I'm a Midwestern boy at heart that remembers Michigan-Notre Dame on those fall Saturdays having massive title implications. I'm very curious to see which team is able to answer the bell for some of the question marks you guys outlined and really announce that, hey, we're going to be here, and we're going to be a viable contender, not only in Michigan's case to win the league, but also maybe have some say on getting to the college football playoff. But two teams who want to get there, and one team that has become a fixture in football's Final Four, the Alabama Crimson Tide are a massive 24.5-point favorite at betonline.ag, total 60.5, as they take on the Louisville Cardinal and Bobby Petrino. Nick Saban, 10-1 against the spread in 11 season openers at the helm of Alabama, speaks to his acumen, coaching up his boys and having a few wrinkles there. But Dusty, I want to start with Louisville. You look at Coach Petrino, he struggled during his time at Arkansas trying to unpack Nick Saban-led defenses. He's going to go with a young quarterback in Juwan Pass taking over for Lamar Jackson. If you're in Coach Petrino's spot, you know you're a massive underdog. What's the kind of mentality in that Louisville locker room, in your opinion, for how they need to go about keeping this game competitive and giving them a puncher's chance late, if it's even possible?
Well, Bobby Petrino's built a good program there. I mean, I think that you continue to be who you are, and you mean you don't change, you know, you don't go in with the fact that and worry about how great Alabama is, right? I mean, you have to believe in what you've built there and get your players to buy into that that role. So, I mean, confidence is key in this. I mean, everybody knows the beast that is Alabama, but why can't it be us? That's, if you're Bobby Petrino, I think that's got to be the selling point. Alabama's built what they built there. That's great. But we've built something here, too. And it's not just Lamar Jackson. Well, that's his message. We'll see if it was Lamar Jackson or if he's really built something there. But I think that's the message, is that he has to remind his team and his players how far they've come since he's come in there. And the fact that it doesn't matter who our opponent is, we just want to continue to get better, you know, as a football team, as a program, and heading in the right direction. That's a tough sell, because when you pop the tape in and you watch Alabama Crimson Tide on both sides of the ball, they are physical, they are nasty, and everyone knows that they're most talented in college football.
Payne, when you look at Alabama, the current edition going into the 2018 season versus the one that won the national championship a season ago, how much different does your overall power profile look? I mean, I know we talked in the SEC preview about how dynamic this offense could be with Tua as a starting quarterback, although we should say they're co-starters, although everybody knows that probably won't be the case. But you look at Alabama, the last time we saw them winning a national title versus what we expect to see on Saturday against Louisville.
Yeah, we don't have them power rated as high as they ended last season, about 2 points lower. Clemson's actually our top power rated team going into the season. And I think you made a good point. All signs indicate Tua is going to be the starter. But I do think Hurts gets some burn. And you did reading, and Louisville said, hey, we had to game plan for both. And I think that's probably an advantage for Alabama in game one. Once weeks 4, 5, 6 roll around and you're able to see how Alabama operates offensively and its snap ratio between Tua and Hurts, I think, you know, that advantage kind of goes away, but not week one. So I think that's big there. You look at Louisville's defense, I think they're obviously going to have issues here. They did create some havoc last year behind the line of scrimmage. You know, their top four guys combined for 49 tackles for loss. The problem is, you know, that style with young guys, you don't keep your gap integrity, and that's why they're 103rd in the country in rushing success rate defense. I think they're going to get ran on a ton here, and overall that's going to be a problem. The one thing I do like about Alabama's offense this year is I think it's going to operate more efficiently because you don't know who they're going to throw the ball to, right? I know the loss of Ridley is big, but the defenses knew exactly where you were going. He was targeted on 32% of Alabama's passes last year. No other guy was targeted more than 10% of the time. So I think a less predictable offense is going to be a more efficient one for the Crimson Tide.
Going to be very interesting to see what Louisville can do to at least slow down Alabama, not necessarily to win the game outright, but to keep this inside the number. Important note here for those folks that don't follow line movement, since a lot of these numbers have popped on the board. This total actually opened 53.5, up a full touchdown. A little bit unusual to see an Alabama total in the 60s, but I think it speaks to what both of you guys mentioned. Louisville's ability to maybe scheme guys open, put up a few points with some of the questions in Alabama's secondary. Meanwhile, Alabama, assuming they'll open the playbook, should have an absolute field day against that aforementioned Ville defense that gave up almost 400 yards per game a season ago. Another extremely intriguing intersectional game, and I know one member of our fine panel here, he doesn't have a vested interest, but he's probably done a little bit more homework, as he mentioned earlier. Ole Miss taking on Texas Tech at NRG Stadium. And Dusty, this number, Texas Tech, a 2-point favorite at betonline.ag, total at 67. The floor is yours, my friend, because you've studied plenty of film on both of these sides.
Cheap plug, 11 a.m. ESPN will get you kicked off for college football Saturday. We'd love to have you on the broadcast. Mark Jones, myself, and Molly McGrath will have the call. It's very interesting matchup, right? Because when you see it on paper, Texas Tech, they spread it around since Cliff Kingsbury's taken over, third most passing yards in college football. They're averaging almost 400 yards passing a game. So you think, well, nothing's going to change, right? And what do we think about Tech? They can't play a lick of defense. You look on the other side, Phil Longo, very similar offense to Cliff Kingsbury, Jordan Taumu at the helm, who had a great back half of the season last year, and then the best wide receiving core in college football, headlined by A.J. Brown. So you would think points, points, points. As Lee Corso would say, not so fast, my friend. This is a Texas Tech team that was much improved defensively under third-year defensive coordinator David Gibbs. They led the Big 12 with 29 takeaways, and they've got all 10 starters back. As a matter of fact, they've got 19 returning players from their two deep from a season ago. So this is the most talented, most experienced defense Cliff Kingsbury's had, and they've had a much more physical training camp this year. They want to get these – they're tackling to the ground. I think that we're going to see potentially more of an emphasis on the run game out of Texas Tech, especially considering Ole Miss was dreadful against the run last year, almost giving up 250 yards per game. And the fact that we haven't heard who the starting quarterback is out of Texas Tech, I expect it to be McClain Carter, but the one game McClain Carter started last year against Texas, though it was a win, he had two picks and two others that could have easily been picks had Texas defensive backs not dropped it. So he's a lefty. He floats a little bit. He doesn't have much zip on the ball. So that leads me to believe this could potentially be a game that Texas Tech is going to try to win defensively, getting after Jordan Taumu, and then with the ground game. And you know how they like to go up-tempo? Wouldn't shock me if they tried to slow the game speed down a little bit to keep that defense rested and to try to establish a running attack on the ground. As I mentioned, it's a much improved Tech defense. How improved is it? They're going to find out week one, because one thing I do like a lot, I like the pace that this Ole Miss offense plays with. I really like Jordan Taumu's decision-making. He's very decisive in the RPO game and within this offense. And also, one thing Shea Patterson didn't do well, he scrambled around great, and he bought himself time to throw, whereas Taumu, if it's not there, he'll put his foot in the ground and get up the field, right? He gets north and south. He doesn't waste his time, and I thought he was just more productive, more efficient running this offense. So, you know, I expect this to be one of the more elite passing attacks, if not the best, in the SEC this year. So that Texas Tech defense will be challenged early. I just think we might see a game here that that not nearly as many points are scored as what a lot of people anticipate heading into this matchup.
I don't know what world we live in where we're talking about Texas Tech winning football games with defense, but you mentioned Tech bringing back those 10 starters on defense and Ole Miss having a very talented receiving core. The trio of guys, A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf, and DeMarcus Lodge, nearly 2,600 receiving yards a season ago. Payne, definitely rare, and we're talking about a high-flying offense coming from the SEC team and a big physical athletic defense coming from the Big 12. When you break this matchup down, I know we've seen a little bit of under money start to hit the market. I can't imagine that's from the recreational better variety.
No, it's not. There have been large waves of under money coming in on this game. Much, you know, Dusty covered it spot on. You think a little bit more ground and pound there for Texas Tech. When you look at Ole Miss, they just are pretty thin defensively. They're dealing with an injury on the defensive line position already. Talking about a couple guys having limited snaps in the trenches there. They're 113th in defensive efficiency last year. I can't see how that's going to improve. The other thing with Ole Miss is last year they were at least able to get after the quarterback, ninth in adjusted sack rate, but they got two guys that are playing in the NFL now on Sunday, so I don't know if they can get after the quarterback. So that's a little bit scary to me there. But I think Ole Miss will have some success offensively. I'm not completely bought into the rejuvenated Texas Tech defense. I think it's nice to say. I think they will improve, right? I think you have to improve. They're a 90th in defensive efficiency. There's only one way but up from there. The question becomes, how improved will they be? Is it a top 70 defense or is it a top 40 defense? I think Cliff Kingsbury's job depends on which one that is. And Dusty made a great point about Tiamu. Much more efficient offensively, average 7.3 yards per play with him, 6.6 with Shea Patterson. So that's a big thing here. And Todd, you did mention the three wide receivers for Ole Miss. When I went back and did some reading, talked to a few guys, it looks like Texas Tech defense is going to be without a few key cogs in their secondary. You have a starting corner who was recently injured in Octavius Morgan. He was a starting corner. He's out. Starting safety, Jashawn Johnson, I'm hearing is a long shot to play, so that could be vital in this matchup.
Hey, real quick, I want to throw this out there in defense of David Gibbs and the Texas Tech defense. I got to defend those Big 12 defenses, right?
Wait a second, Dusty. Hold on a second, Dusty. They play defense in the Big 12? I thought it was defense optional as an entire league.
Well, that's another story for another day, but I'll just say this. You said they were 90th in defensive efficiency last year. There's nowhere to go but up. They were like 125 the year before that, Payne. So they went way up.
Yeah, they were
115th.
Yeah.
So you're right. Like, when I say it's an improved Tech defense and a better Tech defense, I'm comparing that with some of the worst defense in college football that we saw for several years. So how much better do they get? I don't think this is a top 40 defense in college football, but within the Big 12, and even I think as it relates to this game, if they can just be a top 50, top 60, that is, I can't even tell you how far – how much of an improvement that is from where they were 2 years ago. And I think that'll be enough to carry them, to get them to be right there on the cusp of bowl eligible. But don't get it twisted. I don't think this is some elite defense, but you have to keep it in the parameters of what we're comparing it to. And that's some of the worst defenses college football saw for several years. This Tech defense now much more respectable and obviously much improved.
Oh, I totally agree with you. The question I think becomes is, what's the drop off offensively? So if we're expecting, right, you know, a precipitous drop offensively, that means how much more does the defense need to improve? And I agree, Texas Tech defense is certainly going to improve. And I just think it's a question of how much do they improve? And I think that will ultimately determine if Cliff Kingsbury is still there.
Hey, one last thing, Dusty. I mean, I know you mentioned McLean Carter most likely being the guy. Tech's offense going to look the exact same regardless of which guy gets the majority of the reps between the three potential candidates?
I think so. You know, they've got a couple of guys, and there's a true freshman that's looked pretty good in camp so far, and another guy that's more mobile. I'll be surprised if it's not McLean Carter. But, yeah, I think regardless, there's nobody – I don't think they have anybody just yet that they truly trust throwing the football down the field. You know what I mean? So I think that with five offensive linemen back that they return, that's the strength of this offense this year. It's not at the skill position. They lost their top two receivers in Kiki QT and Dylan Cantrell. A lot of productivity there. So I think that when you look at the way this offense is comprised, it's built on the offensive line. I think they're going to play that strength regardless who the signal caller is.
Well, you guys talk about some under money there and potential being less points than anticipated as far as the market's concerned. I think defense could rule the day as we shift from Saturday slate into Sunday action. It's LSU in Miami, again on a neutral field, this time in Arlington, Texas. And you're looking at this number here, Miami, a 3.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total on this game, 47.5. And Payne, I'll start with you and the LSU offense. Joe Burrow named the starting quarterback. A lot of questions here in terms of who's going to replace the productivity that they've lost in the backfield from Leonard Fournette, who handed the baton off to Darius Geis. When you assess LSU, I can't imagine it leaves anyone brimming with confidence when the sentiment that I've read is, we're going to be fine when we can out-talent people. I'm not sure that's a luxury they're going to have on Sunday against the Miami Hurricanes.
No, absolutely not. And we kind of hinted at this in the ACC preview that there would be some money coming in on Miami. It was 2.5 at that time. We're now looking at 3.5. So the Hurricanes are certainly the professional side. I know Joe Burrow was recently named the starter, slightly edged out Miles Brennan. I think it's a tough task going against Manny Diaz's defense. He runs some complicated things, sometimes too complicated for his own defensive guys. But it's really going to present a tough task for Joe Burrow. indications are the LSU offense has really struggled against its own defense in drills and camps. I would envision that's going to carry over to this game. The intriguing thing for me is which Miami defense do we see? We know they're replacing a lot of guys that created havoc on the defensive line, and in return, that helped out that young secondary last year. First nine games, they only allowed 52% completions. Last three games, when the competition got tougher, they allowed 70% completion. So I think what we're going to see offensively for LSU won't be very good. On the other side of the ball, I think Malik Rozier really needs to take that next step. He needs to show up in big games. We saw when the competition got tougher last year, he just wasn't very good. He had the cupcake schedule early. When he faced defenses inside the top 50, seven of them last year, Rozier completed 50% of his passes, had a 1-to-1 touchdown interception ratio. So that's got to step up here, and I think LSU's defense is going to be much improved. So I envision seeing a lot of Malik Rozier using his legs in this game as well.
Yeah. And you mentioned Miami comes into the season last year. They were 125th in the nation in third down conversions, converting just 29% of its chances. You look at LSU defensively, they allow teams to convert at a 35% rate. And you mentioned their defense should be improved even beyond what we saw last season. Dusty, I want to ask you this question more about X's and O's. When you look at Miami, they bring back a secondary that's largely intact. Payne talked about some of the struggles that they showed when they weren't able to get pressure on the opposing quarterback. How much more difficult does their job get knowing that Miami, even with Manny Diaz's experience, is breaking in an entirely new defensive line? And what could be realistic expectations for this team right out of the gates?
Well, I mean, it's difficult. A secondary's best friend is the ability to rush the passer. Ball's coming out quicker. Quarterback's off plane, throwing from different angles. So, I mean, that's those things work hand in hand. That being said, what a nice luxury for a secondary to get broken in against Joe Burrow in this lethargic passing attack at LSU, right? So, I mean, from a matchup standpoint, it's a perfect opportunity for them to get some confidence. And if that pass rush isn't humming out of the chute, you would think that they're still going to be able to have success and do well in coverage. You know, when I look at Miami's defense, the linebacking core for me can't be understated. And it's not just in the run game, but these guys are athletic, they're fast, and they're also a big part of what they want to do covering people, whether it's zone coverage or they can go man-to-man with the way Quarterman and company can run. So, to be honest with you, not ideal for a pass defense if they got to, you know, completely remake their defensive line. That said, Manny Diaz, I mean, he's going to be dialing up some blitzes. If he can't get there with his front four, expect him to be dialing up some pressures and doing things to really mess with Joe Burrow, because I do think with all four starters back in the secondary, he'll put those guys on islands. He'll trust them in some man-to-man situations, and that's what their calling card is. 44 sacks a year ago, the turnover chain was out and about with 31 takeaways. They're going to look to replicate that. If they can't get home with four, best believe they're going to be dialing up pressures and doing whatever they can to make life miserable on Joe Burrow.
And LSU down one of their key cogs on the offensive line. Ed Ingram suspended. I think it hurts quite a bit against this retooling Miami team. And Payne, I wanted to get you to close the book on this game before we move on to the Monday showdown with Florida State and Virginia Tech. We obviously aren't all that high in LSU. Those folks that listen to the SEC preview podcast, if they haven't in its entirety, it's still not too late. We mentioned LSU as a team that we didn't think could meet Vegas expectations, but we also talked about Miami probably struggling given the lofty perception. How difficult is it as a professional bettor when two teams that are probably sells early in the season go head to head and trying to figure out which one might be a particular buy in just a 60-minute sample size?
Yeah, it's tougher to do when you're going to rely on your power numbers, obviously, a lot this time of year. And I think we're just more down on LSU. You start to look at the matchup and you start to do your reading and dig into where there could be some matchup advantages. And I think, you know, Miami's defense is really, really going to give LSU some troubles. Could turn it over, could create some short fields. Just looking at the power numbers right now, I mean, Miami is sitting there around, you know, top 15 for us. We're a little down on LSU. Just they're a little outside the top 20 right now. So when you look at this, we made the game at its core number, Miami minus -4. And so if you can get on the good side of that key number, that's what a lot of professional bettors have done at this point.
You mentioned you guys being down in LSU. So are the popularity poll voters. This will be the lowest preseason ranking for the Bayou Bengals going all the way back to 2000. The final game of the weekend, an ACC showdown between Florida State and Virginia Tech. It's the Seminoles, a 7.5-point favorite at betonline.ag in Willie Taggart's debut. Total in this game, 57. That total has been bet up from as low as 50 in some locations. Of course, the big news coming out of Tallahassee, DeAndre Francois regains the starting job. And Payne, when we look at Florida State, how much different will life be under Willie Taggart than the way they wrapped up the Jimbo Fisher era?
A lot different. And that money started to come in on the over, you know, before Francois was named the guy. I'm told there wasn't a drastic difference in the productivity at that position. They just liked Francois because he's a little bit more of the mobler guy at this point. The knee checked out. I think he's the better runner, and that's ultimately why he was named the starter. He got his act together, too, off the field, apparently moved back into the dorms, became a team guy last year. You know, he wasn't really a team guy. There was instances where you'd see him, you know, when he was injured on the sidelines, you know, retweeting people that said, we would win these games if you were the starting quarterback. That's not the mental side of the game that you want from a leader. Offensively, I think we're going to see pace here, right? You know, Willie Taggart was eighth in adjusted pace last year at Oregon. The difference is they run a ton, 11% more than the college football average. So it's a lot of run, and you like to take deep shots with this offense. A lot of great backs. I think the offensive line struggled last year. You know, offensive lines like to get after it in the trenches. They much prefer being run blockers. I think that style will certainly help Florida State's offensive line. They're not going to have to block as long as well. So I think that's going to be the key here. And, you know, partly why the total has ticked up. The other part is the way they're going to employ their defense. Harlan Burnett wants to get after it. He wants to be aggressive. He wants to bring that pressure FSU defense back to Tallahassee. And they're okay giving up the big play. I think they will give up explosive plays. But Willie Taggart has said, listen, I don't want my offense sitting over there getting out of rhythm on the sidelines as you give up 10, 12, 14 play drives offensively. If we do give up a big hitter, fine, we'll just bring our offense back out onto the field. So I think that's something to look for here because I do think Virginia Tech's offense is at least capable.
Yeah, and you mentioned Willie Taggart installing, of course, his Gulf Coast offense there in Tallahassee. Last season at Oregon, 15 plays of 50 yards or longer for the Ducks. And that's not even over a full season, in my opinion, because without Justin Herbert, clearly that Ducks offense bogged down for extended stretches. I think Cam Akers can be a major beneficiary of a run-first offense. Dustin,
for Florida State this year, guys, I don't want to understate it, but it's the offensive line. They've been dreadful the last 2 years. They don't move people off the football. They don't protect the quarterback. Is that offensive line going to be improved? I mean, if they're improved with Cam Akers, Jacques Patrick, they're going to run the football. I mean, Willie Taggart's going to get this rushing attack going. I think DeAndre Francois, based off what I saw him 2 years ago and then what I watched from Blackman last year, I think he was the superior player. I also like his frame more. I think he's going to be more durable. I think he's going to add a little bit with the rushing attack. So, I mean, I think this Florida State offense could be pretty good. They're going to need guys to step up and catch the football, look for Tamori and Terry to potentially be that guy. But if this offensive line can move people and can be a much improved unit, Florida State's offense, I think they're going to put up some pretty good numbers to surprise some people year one for Willie Taggart.
Well, and this is a perfect segue, Dusty, to a Virginia Tech defense. It's extremely inexperienced, maybe the most since that Bud Foster has had to deal with since coming to Blacksburg. You look at six new linebackers, a rotation of unproven corners, and a quote that comes out from senior defensive tackle Ricky Walker that says, it's kind of tough at first. All week when you're doing something one way and the next thing you know for two quarters, you got to change it up on the field. It's going to be tough, but you've got to be locked in and trust your brother beside you to just execute. I mean, Tech is a lot of turnover there. This probably isn't the tune-up that they were looking for with a showdown in conference against an offense that has so many moving pieces.
No, that's exactly right. And, you know, they lose two first-round picks in the Edmonds brothers, Tremaine and Terrell, and they were fantastic. I mean, they were the back end of that defense. They lose guys all across the back end. I do like Ricky Walker. I like Vinny Mahoto up front. That's the strength of this Virginia Tech defense. I don't think with Bud Foster at the helm, it's going to just fall off a cliff, but they're not going to be as good as they've been the last couple of years. And, you know, if Virginia Tech can't slow down Florida State's ability to run the football, it could be a long day. And I think that if Bud Foster and that defense has to overcommit too much personnel to slow down the rushing attack, that's going to set up some easy throws for DeAndre Francois. So Willie Taggart, his new look offense, it's catching Virginia Tech at the right time in this opener because this defense will not be nearly as good week one as it'll potentially be week 7, 8, 9, as the season progresses, and a lot of these guys that are green, that haven't played much football, they get more acclimated to what big-time college football is all about.
Payne, when we look at this number, and we'll close here, 5.5 out to 7.5. I know we talk about it until we're blue in the face. Once we go through the touchdown, chance that maybe this number continues to go before there's some resistance to that 9.5-10 range, should it ever get there?
I would say that that's possible, although, you know, early on the limits are a little bit lower. Certainly Florida State appears to be the side here. I could see some buyback eventually, but I'm not quite sure when it will come. And I think, you know, Dusty outlined that perfectly. Florida State's offense, what will it be? It's probably going to be a little bit better game one against this defense for Virginia Tech. So the real side here from what I'm hearing, everyone loves the over in this game, just simply because Florida State's defense, the way that they're going to play, it's going to lead to bigger plays. I think Florida State's offense is going to have some success here when you're looking at a Virginia Tech defense, you know, replacing 9 of the top 10 linebackers and secondary members. So that's a lot of guys that are missed here. And then the guys you were relying on that you brought in through transfers, a lot of those guys got injured. Adonis Alexander, he became ineligible. JUCO transfer Jeremy Webb, he tore his Achilles, and Mook Reynolds was dismissed. So three guys that you had brought in to kind of help patch up this defense, they're all gone. So the defense is going to be a mash unit, especially early on, but they should get better as the season goes on.
Six big games, six massive breakdowns from you fine gentlemen. Dusty, before we let you go, as we know you have a calendar that's chocked to the brim this time of year, anything else we should be keeping tabs on for the opening weekend of college football? I know Payne and I are both excited, but I'm sure our listeners have been waiting with bated breath to try and be able to get their football fix in early September.
I'll tell you a game that I like quite a bit, West Virginia, Tennessee. And it seems too easy almost. I think the number's around 10. I just don't know how Tennessee's going to slow down the passing attack of West Virginia. I really don't. I mean, they were dreadful against the pass last year. I don't know if that's going to be much improved year one for Jeremy Pruitt. So I look at that game, and I expect West Virginia to come out of the block smoking. And Will Greer, David Sills, his other wide receivers, and they've got a really good offensive line, two bookend offensive tackles that I think are going to make that potentially the best offense in the Big 12. So I do not think Tennessee is going to be rebuilt in time week number one on either side of the football. West Virginia's got some question marks defensively, but I don't know if Tennessee's got enough to be able to capitalize on that. So I look at that game, and I think the Mountaineers got a chance to make a statement week number one.
Should be interesting. Always fun to watch the Big 12 matched up against the SEC, because we know those are the kind of games that can oftentimes define a conference when we're making a case for some of the resumes in the college football playoff. He won't just join us this week. He'll be with us every single week throughout the course of the college football season, the latest and greatest addition to the Bet the Board podcast. Dusty, thanks again for joining us. Folks can follow you on Twitter at Dusty Dvorak, and looking forward to having you with extensive breakdowns from now until the beginning of December, my friend.
Hey, boys, college football's back. Weekly betting is back. God, I love the fall, man. Let's do it.
Interesting, Payne, to get Dusty's take on what he's seen from this much anticipated, probably not in that top tier of games, obviously, but second tier between Ole Miss and Texas Tech that have a number of questions. Ole Miss on the defensive side and Texas Tech in terms of how this Red Raiders offense is going to look.
Yeah, and he's obviously on the call, so he's interviewed a lot of these coaches, players, so he's got the great intel there for sure. So I think that was an added element to the podcast where, you know, we see all the time, we can read, we can do our things, but when you have a guy on the podcast that actually is interviewing the players and coaches of both teams, you get a little better feel for what potentially could take place. And I think that was a great nugget about Texas Tech potentially leaning on their offensive line, going run first, because we get his perspective as an analyst, but it actually matched with what the professional side is here under in this game. So it's nice to get that confirmation from both areas, both the analytics side, the professional better side, and then the analyst side. Getting that to match, I think, is perfect.
I mean, you're the more likable guy between the two of us. We have to find a way to get you onto these conference calls, interviewing coaches, and see if they'll welcome you with open arms into their facility so we can get this kind of intel instead of just leaning on Dusty and some of our other friends in the media side for all that intel.
Some bettors have been known to silently sneak into the back end of those calls.
You do whatever you can to try and get an edge. And in our case, it's from the big game breakdowns to the bookmaking perspective. He joins us every Wednesday during the course of the college football season to talk about all things from the bookmaker's perspective. You can follow him on Twitter at Dave Mason, B-O-L. And Dave, preview podcasts are officially in the books. We start talking college football for real this coming weekend.
Yeah, it's a great feeling. You know, a lot of preparation to the site and reactivation campaigns and everything. People are coming back to the site in record numbers, so we're ready to go.
And when you look at the way some of these numbers are moving, how much of the action for these week one games will have bet previously versus coming in, you know, the 24 hours or in some case 24 minutes before these games kick off?
24 minutes or 24 seconds sometimes. Most of the action is still coming in. So, you know, I've said it before on some previous podcasts that, you know, that so many people disappear after the Super Bowl and then they just go dormant for a few months and many of them don't come back until the week of or day of. So we're still got probably 80% of the action yet to come in, probably about 75% of the action yet to come in. So the early numbers look really good. So we're looking forward to college football week one without a doubt.
And Dave, we know you opened these lines up for week one back in May. Have we seen any sharp or real glaring public liabilities piling up since then?
Oh, yeah, plenty. Let's go sharp first. Northwestern +3, that's currently +1. Tulane +7. They are now +6. Purdue over 49, that's currently 51.5. Wyoming +3, that's now pick +105. Hawaii +14 and +13.5, currently +11. And BYU +13 and +12. Currently +11.5, and more sharp action will be coming in day of the game. So expecting a lot more. As far as public is concerned, yeah, there's already some big needs. 84% of the bettors are on Minnesota versus New Mexico State. 69% of the bettors are on Wake Forest versus Tulane. 76% on Texas versus Maryland. And 71% on Bama versus Louisville. The two games getting the most action. Overall action, it might not be the most lopsided percentage-wise, but because there's so much action, there'll be sweats too. 58% on Auburn versus Washington, and the big one Saturday night, 60% on Michigan versus Notre Dame. So even though the percentage isn't as big on that one, that will be one of the biggest exposures of the day just because there's going to be so much action on it.
You think just given the time slot, Dave, the Michigan-Notre Dame game will be the most heavily bet game of the day with two powerhouse nationally recognized programs?
Oh, 100%. That's the biggest bet, without a doubt, the Saturday's biggest game. National TV, there's two powerhouses, big public programs. They're both ranked in the top 15. Just looking at the early action, there's already 50% more money on that than the next game, which is Auburn Washington. So yeah, I mean, the standalone game Sunday, Monday, they're standalone, so they'll rival it as far as action is concerned. But as far as the whole betting board Saturday, without a doubt, Michigan Notre Dame will be the biggest game of the day.
And you mentioned folks who want to place their bets, whether it's 24 minutes or 24 seconds beforehand. Hopefully our Bet the Board listeners are thinking in anticipation of what should be an outstanding weekend of the college football schedule. For those folks looking to try and reload their betonline.ag accounts or maybe opening up an account with you guys for the first time, what type of promotions can they expect this coming weekend?
All right, we have the Bet the Board bonus still up on the site. If you do not have a betonline.ag account, sign up for one. Use promo code 75BTB for a 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a BetOnline account, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% reload bonus. The max bonus is $1,000, and all the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard.
That's those sultry sounds are of Dave Mason. You can follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Mason, B-O-L. As we said, he'll be with us every Wednesday throughout the course of the college football season. He'll join us every Thursday as well to talk about all things NFL. Dave, thanks as always for your time, and best of luck this weekend, my friend.
All right, fellas. Talk to you next week.
I have to imagine Payne having been behind the counter before. You know, these kind of opening weekends, everybody is excited to try and put their money to work for him. But when you have the kind of marquee matchups that Dave talked about, where you're already seeing so much handle on Michigan, Notre Dame, that as a bookmaker, you're licking your chops trying to get something at least close to a balanced book so you're not sweating out a six, maybe even a seven-figure decision.
Those are tough on opening weekend. You don't want to get behind the eight ball if you're a booker, even a better. So that game, we talk about this all the time about liabilities, and I know a lot of people like to use bet percentages, public percentages, reverse line movement, and all that. There's certain games where they matter just a little bit more if you aren't privy to the information before the fact that, you know, the lines moved. I know a lot of people track that stuff. On a game like Michigan Notre Dame, where there's going to be, you know, way more bets, way more money. Certainly at that point, you can use it as a nice indicator. But when you're dealing with, you know, smaller games, Louisiana Tech, South Alabama, and professional bettors are lining up on one side, usually, you know, that's not one you're going to be frightened with potentially if there is public money or the more bet splits on one side and the other. So for Michigan Notre Dame, I think that's going to be interesting to see. And again, I can't get on the Notre Dame bandwagon. I think they are down this year. You know, I've looked at power numbers from a lot of professional bettors. They have them, you know, top seven. I just don't see it. The offensive line is in question. The running back position is in question. You lose Mike Elko on defense. I don't think Notre Dame is going to be as good as a lot of professionals feel.
Yeah, it's always interesting to see when your reading leads you one way and you watch the market, especially early on, hold certain teams in high regard, or in the other on the flip side, be down on some teams, to see ultimately which side is right. So keep all that in mind. You mentioned bet percentages, reverse line movement, all that stuff. Having those tools are great, but it's more important to know how to use them. So don't apply them with blanket generalizations. I know there's a proliferation of information out there. Just be very careful. Do your own homework and try and use some of those things to supplement your handicapping. And Payne, before we get into the best bet, I want to mention and thank a lot of our loyal listeners that have gone on iTunes. They've given us those 5-star reviews. They subscribe to the podcast. Continue to do that. We appreciate everyone who shares their sentiment. It only allows our brand to grow and ultimately provide a much better product for you guys and get in front of more eyeballs.
Absolutely. And we'll be doing, we can do it NFL week one. Go in there, leave your 5-star review, leave a nice little comment. We're going to pool all those together and pick a winner. And we're going to continue to do that every couple weeks just to thank you for your support. We'll do a nice little Visa gift card, Bet the Board swag pack with gear and things of that nature. So keep leaving those 5-star reviews because there's potential for some nice, nice swag.
And speaking of all that, I know this is the college football podcast, but I do want to mention, and probably was remiss not to do so at the top of the show, NFL contest. The 5K football free roll is open for registration. I mean, Payne sent a pretty strong over-under on number of entrants we were going to get. We're about a third of the way there. Make sure you're following at BetTheBoard on Twitter. You're following Payne at Payne Insider, and you're following me at Todd Furman to be eligible. We've tweeted this stuff out. If it's not at the top of our timeline, you don't have to scroll down too far. Absolutely free, a chance to win your share of $5,000 in prizes. Pick 5 NFL games every week, and even if you miss a week, you can win an individual swag pack. I will say that you better go 5-0, and you better be damn close on your tiebreaker, because this is the most competitive field that we've seen in a sports betting contest. So encourage you, even if you're a college football bettor at heart, you may as well give your hand a shot. Absolutely free to enter to try and do so. But Payne, before we close up shop on week one, we have to follow a tradition, and we got to get to these guys to the window somehow. I have a feeling it's not going to be on one of the marquee matchups we already discussed on the show.
It's going to be pretty ugly, and we're going to fade USC. We're going to go with the UNLV, rotation number 189, and I just think that they're going to be able to do enough offensively here. You look at a big look-ahead game for USC, potentially not wanting to put a bunch on film. They are working in freshman JT Daniels as the starting quarterback. Certainly down the road, he could be the guy. I was told it wasn't much of a quarterback battle in terms of who they were going to name. They basically handed him the job because he certainly wasn't the most qualified, certainly didn't perform the best through camp. So they basically just handed the freshman the job, just kind of as an investment for the future. So I think there's a little bit of a learning curve there. And I do like UNLV's offense. We're looking at 26.5 right now. It is a dead number. I think maybe we want to wait on that just a little bit. If you can get 27, perfect, go. But 26 36.5, virtually the same thing as 24.5. So I think it might be worth waiting to get that 27, but 26.5 is fine as well.
Oh, look at us coming out of the gates firing with the college football powerhouse right in my backyard, the UNLV Running Rebels, plus those generous points.
Figured you'd have some information there, some inside scoop.
Yeah, you know, every now and again, you get a little bit of scoop, but nobody wants to know how the sausage is made. They just want to know it tastes good.
There you go.
So that is the name of the game. UNLV plus the points, our best bet here on the Bet the Board podcast, week one. Payne, before we close up shop, any parting shots, either directed at me, Dusty, our listeners, or just overall general sentiment as we kick things off for real this weekend?
No, that's everything. Good luck. Don't go crazy week one. Manage that bankroll. It's a long season. Don't fire like a drunken sailor into lines that have already been moved for 3-4 months. You know, find 1, 2, 3 games and live to fight another day.
Protect that bankroll. Enjoy opening weekend, some marquee matchups. Spend your time with family and friends, because once the NFL starts next weekend and we have that layered into college football, you ain't going to see them a whole heck of a lot until the calendar gets to 2019. So for Dave Mason, you can follow him on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. You can follow Dusty Dvorak on Twitter as well, and Payne Insider. I am Todd Furman. Best of luck with all your week one college football selections, and hopefully we'll see you at the window.